Category 10. Annihilation. Massive scale and duration. Planetary event. Chapter 8. Mistakes. A legendary name. Make them pay. Magnus drifted on tides unknown. An infinite white void surrounded him, without dimensions or points of reference. He did not know this place, but it was clearly not the great ocean. Perhaps this was what it was like to die. Or was this what a mind experienced when it finally let slip the moorings of existence and gave in to death? No, neither of those answers seemed satisfactory. For all that he had no experience of dying, this did not feel like the end of his body of light. He had no sensation of his flesh, no sight of the absurdly fragile silver thread that linked his power to his corporeal shell when soaring in the great ocean. Perhaps he had reached too far, dared too greatly, and this was the price he must pay. His body lived, but it was no longer linked to his mind. He had seen aspirants fail in this way before, and watched as their bodies wasted away without the spirit to sustain them. Would that be his fate? Would his sons be forced to watch their sire fade, the skin pulling back on his skull, the flesh melting from his bones? Or would his miraculous gene-forged body endure forever, leaving him trapped in this limbo state? Who could know? The great dramaturg had only scratched the surface of things when he called death the undiscovered country, from whose bourne no traveller returns. If this was his fate, then Magnus would have no regrets. Better to have flown too close to the sun than never feel its heat. "I am still alive," he said, and his voice was thrown back at him as though he stood in the centre of a great amphitheatre. Since no vistas were presenting themselves in this void, Magnus would conjure his own. If he was going to spend an eternity in this place, then he would be damned if he'd do it bored. Memories surged around him, a series of snapshots from his life. The climb into the hills of Prospero, where he found the statue whose destruction gave rise to the Fellowships of the Thousand Suns. The inaugural conclave of the first masters in the Reflecting Cave, taking a knee before his father upon their first meeting in Oculum Square, though in truth they had spoken for many years already. He conjured them at random, knowing all the while that nothing was ever truly random, wondering which memory would come to the fore. The answer presented itself, as the night he had climbed the Astartes Tower to meet his father on the eve of his departure from Terra swam into focus. It had been a bittersweet moment, for they were both aware it would be many years before they met this way again. The Great Crusade was a vision of supreme ambition, one that would take father and sons to the uttermost corners of the galaxy for decades, perhaps even centuries. Only a fool would entertain any notions of certainty on the commencement of such a singular undertaking. They had sat upon the highest peak of the slender tower, and cast their minds out over the world, flying together one last time. Only then did Magnus understand he was not simply witnessing a memory, but was part of it. Their bodies of light threaded the deep canyons of the mid-Atlantic ridge, then circled the arid dust basin of the Mediterranean, before following the Urals from Cara Oceanica to the Kievan Rus Khaganate. They circled Mount Narodnia, watching the ghosts of Fulgrim and Ferus Manus as they competed over the labour of twin weapons.
"So perfect," said the Emperor.
"Which one?" asked Magnus, but his father just smiled. Magnus watched his brothers striving to outdo one another, finding their need to prove their superiority faintly ridiculous. What did it matter who could forge the best weapon, when a Primarch was a weapon unto himself?
"You are so like me in so many ways," said the Emperor.
Magnus flushed with pride, but as always, the Emperor's words carried multiple meanings.
You have a great many of my strengths. But strength magnified to excess eventually becomes a weakness.
How can that be?
Confidence can spill over into arrogance, said the Emperor. An obsessive pursuit of perfection can blind you to what it costs to achieve. Attention to detail can become micromanagement.
Magnus, you have my intellect and my power, but like me, you are prone to believing you can do no wrong,
that your intellect lifts you above the risk of making petty mistakes or errors based on emotion.
What mistakes have I made?
Asked Magnus, dreading the answer. Only time will tell what is a mistake and what is not. But an inability to believe you can ever make a mistake is dangerous. It leaves a mind open to certainty, and unwavering certainty is our greatest enemy. Always question, and always be open to different ways of thinking, other ways of untangling the knot. That is the gift I give to you on this eve of our crusade.
I do not understand.
You will, my son, said the Emperor. Despite all I have just said, you are different enough from me that I can see how you will succeed where I have failed.
Failed? How have you failed?
I do not know yet, said the Emperor, with a wistful sheen to his subtle body. But I will soon. And I sense you and your favored son must play a part in rectifying my mistakes.
My favored son? Asked Magnus. They are all my sons.
There's truth in that, yes. But there is one who will bear your ambitions when you need them to travel farther than you could ever dream.
Where in this galaxy can I not travel? Said Magnus.
He felt his father's amusement.
There are always places a son will travel where his father should not, replied the Emperor. Just when you believe there is nothing more to be done, one of your sons will show you how wrong you have been all this time.
Well, this sounds like gloomy advice, Father, said Magnus. I had hoped for something a little more inspiring as we venture out into the unknown.
What could be more inspiring than to know you have taught your sons to reach greater heights than you? They are your immortality, Magnus.
No more had been said on the matter, and they had returned to their bodies atop the Astartes Tower to say farewell. His father had taken a seat by the great celestial oculum and the impossibly complex maps detailing his plans for galactic conquest. Though they had shared a sublime moment flying the ether, Magnus knew his time here was at an end. The Emperor turned and extended his hand, and Magnus looked into his father's eyes, wondering how he had not noticed the wistful look of sadness he now saw in them.
Remember this moment, said the Emperor.
I will, promised Magnus. He took his father's hand, and Magnus gasped in sudden pain as his spirit was wrenched from the memory and hurled back into his body. Magnus opened his eye. Harsh lumen strips and hissing pipes hung from a ceiling of bare and brutal girders. The grim functionality of his surroundings sought to push the warm memory of his father from his mind. Magnus knew better than to suppose his consciousness had fashioned that particular memory purely by chance. What mistakes have I made on Morningstar? Every atom in his body was bathed in fire. Together with Ahriman and Phosos Takkar, Magnus marched through the arched, fresco-lined passageways of the Shirai Maveth. Iron warriors flanked each intersection like knights of old, and acid-etched blast doors lifted at every choke point. The interior of the Iron Warriors' fortress was a beautiful death trap, a series of cunning blind alleys, bottlenecks and crossfires that would make any assault suicidal. Repercussive pain filled his bones with barbed wire, his veins with acid. He had known that such magnificent power could not be wielded without consequence, but this pain was beyond even his powers to ease.
Oh, perhaps you should have remained on the Medicaid level, my lord,
said Ahriman. "I am grateful for your concern, Azek," said Magnus. "But I can tolerate this. I do not pretend to know how deep your pain runs, my lord, but the Pavoni were fussing over you like a newborn." The image amused Magnus, and he smiled, though even it sent a current of agony through the muscles of his face. "How did I get here?"
"The Lord of Iron carried you," said Phocis to Kaa. "He would not permit us to bear you."
Magnus heard the strain in Phocis Takar's voice, and felt his son's anger that someone, even a Primarch, not of the 15th Legion, had borne his wounded lord.
"And how long have I been absent?"
"A day and a night," answered Ahriman.
"What have I missed?" "Morningstar is rushing to embrace its own extinction," said Phocis Takar. "The last 30 hours have seen a sharp rise in attacks by the Sons of Shaitan, bombings, spree killings, and random acts of individual psychosis. We're seeing a wave of mass suicides in the refugee camps and escalating incidences of familial violence resulting in bloodshed."
"The Lux Ferrum?" asked Magnus. "Fully evacuated," said Ahriman. "But there is something else you should know."
"What?"
"Athava and the warriors you sent to Zarukin have not returned. We cannot raise them on the Vox or contact them via psychic means." Magnus paused to consider Ahriman's news, taking a moment to allow a sudden nausea to pass. Clearly his sense of secrets buried in Zarukin had been correct. But what danger had he sent his sons into?
"I will find them," Magnus promised, letting out a hot breath.
"We do not leave any of our brothers behind." The pain racking his mind and body was intense. His spine felt as if every vertebra was being inexorably crushed in a forge vice, and his thoughts moved like glue through his mind. He would be suffering this pain for weeks to come.
"Where does this increase in attacks put us in terms of getting the rest of Morningstar evacuated?"
He felt Ahriman and Phocis Takar's reluctance to answer.
"Or better the Lord of Iron tells you," said Ahriman.
The heart of the Sharai Maveth had changed a great deal since Magnus had last seen it. Perturabo's sanctum still had the air of a workshop, but one with a series of impossible deadlines to meet. The vaulted space was now filled with new additions, hardwired cogitator banks drawing power from freshly installed battery racks, scores of Lex mechanics, and 100 or more calculus logi, passing linguascript at the speed of thought between adepts seconded from the Analyticae. Majos Tancarix held court over the new arrivals, and directed his Mechanicum staff with vigour as they attempted to untangle the chaos that threatened to overwhelm the evacuation effort. Perturabo and a dozen of his warriors watched from his elevated workshop, and Magnus winced as he climbed the steps to meet his brother. Perturabo looked up as he approached, and his stoic expression lifted at the sight of Magnus. He stepped away from the warriors gathered around the table and shook his head.
"I have long held that it would take something immense to kill one of us," said Perturabo. "But I had no idea you would take that as a challenge."
Magnus shrugged, masking the pain shooting down his spine.
"I had to do something," said Magnus. "I could not stand by and let so many die."
"You would have done the same?"
"Modesty doesn't suit you," said Perturabo with a grin. "I know I am strong, but even I would struggle to bear the weight of a starship."
"It was not physical strength that saved the Lux Ferrum."
"I know. But it does not matter how you saved that ship, only that you did. Tales of your heroism will travel far from Morningstar. The great Primarch Magnus, who bore the weight of a vast starship upon his noble shoulders. This is how legends are born, brother."
Magnus had not considered the idea of his act becoming widely known, but with troublesome rumours already circulating the crusading expeditionary fleets, perhaps a story to reinforce the positive aspects of the Thousand Sons' abilities would be no bad thing. Perturabo nodded towards the viewscreen, calling up images of the many thousands of people beyond the city walls still awaiting rescue.
"Have your legionaries told you what the people of Morningstar are calling you now?" asked Perturabo. "At least the ones who aren't killing themselves in droves."
"No, what?
They call you the Crimson King. Has a nice ring to it, don't you think?
That it does, agreed Magnus. Perturabo placed one hand on his shoulder, the other at his neck, pulling him close for a fraternal embrace. His next words were for Magnus alone.
You came a heartbeat from death, he whispered. By all rights, you should have died, and our father's great crusade would have been robbed of one of its brightest sons, brighter even than dear Horus. More importantly, I would have lost a dear brother. There are none among our kin I regard as highly as you. So promise me you won't risk your life like that again.
Magnus shrugged and said,
We are warriors, Perturabo. Who among us can make such a promise?
Perturabo released him and turned back to the screen.
Heroic as it was, we are now faced with the burdensome task of recalculating the tally on who yet remains to be evacuated from Morningstar.
Are you saying I shouldn't have saved the Lux Ferrum?
Not at all. We came here to save lives.
Then I do not understand.
Perturabo called up a view of Kalena's port facilities. The Lux Ferrum lay shattered across the landing platforms, its keel split and gaping wounds in the hull exposing the vessel's iron guts. Mechanicum breaker units, under the direction of the wounded Tezzer Rom, swarmed the ship, cutting it apart like oceanic hunters harvesting a slaughtered leviathan.
You saved the ship, but its wreckage now blocks fully a third of Kalena's platforms, said Perturabo. Mistress Eshkol informs me it will take at least 4 days to render them usable again, and even with the newly constructed landing facilities beyond the city walls, my best estimate predicts only a third of those who boarded the mass conveyor will escape.
Magnus was appalled.
So even though I saved the Lux Ferrum, most of the people it carried will still die?
Regrettably so. We have not the ship assets, nor, as it turns out, the time to save them.
But we had months before Morningstar became unstable.
We did. Now we do not.
Were your calculations in error?
A flash of irritation crossed Perturabo's face.
They were not. Something fundamental has changed.
How is that possible?
I do not know. See for yourself.
The Primarch of the Iron Warriors swept away the image of the Lux Ferrum's hulk and replaced it with a wavering hololithic image of Morningstar. Innumerable cyclone-like storms swirled over the sphere's volume, growing and multiplying with terrifying speed and ferocity. Their motion was unpredictable, each changing direction at random, joining with others or breaking apart into hyper-violent local tempests.
These are Morningstar's geomagnetic field patterns, said Perturabo, rotating the globe with deft swipes of his palm.
Magnus studied the pattern shifting over the globe. The motion of the undulating storm fronts and magnetic dissonance put him in mind of a deep and turbulent ocean. The normal flow of energy around the planet was hideously disrupted, and patterns that ought to be regular and unidirectional were jagged and inconstant. And yet, Magnus stepped closer to the command table, shifting the lambent globe and drinking in the information. He let the ebb and flow of the magna storms wash over him.
I see something,
he said, trying not to let the elusive thought slip away.
Something in the depths of the flow. Something unnatural.
Magnus shifted his mind into the fourth enumeration, the realm of abstraction, coaxing revelation instead of forcing it into the light. Something in the evolution of the growth patterns shared by the storms felt awry, as though it were governed by an equation so complex, so fractal, it was all but invisible.
This is not random, he said, now seeing the beauty underpinning it all. That the patterns move like music or deep ocean currents, but they are not the result of natural interactions.
The source of these storms is man-made.
Man-made? Said Perturabo. Someone did this deliberately?
Magnus nodded, seeing more of the pattern emerge as the grammar of the storms coalesced in his mind.
If Magos Tancarix can develop an inverse algorithm capable of breaking down the mathematics of these flows...
We can find the source, finished Perturabo.
Wind-driven rain fell in torrential sheets over the platforms atop the Shirai Maveth, lashing the hulls of the two stormbirds, one gunmetal grey, the other vivid crimson. Lingering propellant fumes choking the upper atmosphere made the rain pitch black and mildly acidic. Portions of the gunship's hulls were streaked where the paint was thinnest.
"It looks like Morningstar is stripping them of their identity," said Araman.
"But no such damage is accruing to your warplate, brother," said Phocis Takar, cupping his hands and letting them fill with dark rain that looked like oil.
Araman looked down at his armour and saw that Phocis Takar was right. Even in the gloom of the oncoming storm and the flickering lightning, the hue of his plate was still vividly crimson.
"I will try to take that as a positive sign," he said, trying not to read anything into this peculiarity.
"You should," advised Phocis Takar. "You have become too glum of late, Azek. We are almost done with this place, and soon we will be back on the crusade, doing the Emperor's work."
Phocis Takar stood and let the rain fall from his palms. He rubbed his gauntlets together as if washing his hands. Araman turned his head to the sky and the coruscating atmosphere. A planet-wide lightning storm was brewing, the sky blazing in all directions, as if a distant conflagration were slowly closing on the city like a noose. Araman knew that wasn't literally true, but as a metaphor, it was perfectly apt.
"This is how a planet ought to meet its end," said Phocis Takar, "fighting to the last and raging at its extinction."
"I've had my fill of world's ending," said Araman. "We embarked on this endeavour to save the Emperor's realm, not to watch it die."
"Not every world can be saved," said Phocis Takar.
"Maybe not every world deserves to be saved."
Araman rounded on Phocis Takar. "What do you mean by that?" The Raptora adept shrugged.
"This planet's roots are weak. The Imperium should not be built on worlds whose foundations are crumbling."
"And who would make that decision?" asked Araman.
"You?" "Why not? Are we not the foremost legion in intellect? Do we not divine the future? If we cannot know better than any other which worlds will provide good footings for the Emperor's dominion, then who else can? Would you trust them?"
Phocis Takar nodded in the direction of the Iron Warriors, giants with reflected bolts of lightning glittering upon their armour. Before Araman could answer, his mouth filled with the taste of blood and ash, of melting glass and steel. The recurring image of rain falling in endless sheets sent a jolt of horror through him, a sense of foreboding so strong it all but overwhelmed him. Perturabo conferred with his tech marines as his warriors boarded their Stormbird, and Araman's gaze was drawn inexorably to Forex, a warrior who had been as good as dead and ready for interment in a dreadnought sarcophagus until Araman's unchecked power had healed him. The only sign of the warrior's near death was a slight limp, but Araman saw a dark halo wreathing him, an effect that ancient shamans had known and feared as a death mark. Could any of his brothers see it? Or was this merely an echo of the vision he had seen of the monstrous destiny ahead of Forex? He turned away, the sight of the Iron Warrior stirring a bone-deep nausea within him.
"Is something wrong?"
asked Phocis Takar.
"What?"
"Your weapon."
Araman looked down and saw he had his hand on the grip of his bolter. He eased his finger carefully from the trigger.
"Apologies, brother," he said, wishing to make light of the lapse in weapon discipline. "Ever since the attack on the Lux Ferrum, my seer sight has me jumping at shadows."
"Well, good. That's your survival instinct kicking in," replied Phocis Takar. "One of those shadows might be dangerous."
Araman nodded, already well aware that Forex was something supremely dangerous, even if he could not yet understand how. He let out a breath and forced himself to look away. 15th Legion Tech Marines tended the hull of Magnus's gunship, prepping it for a flight into hostile atmospherics. They fitted deflection conductors, ceramite insulators, and ablative plates over sensitive components that could be burned out by a rogue electromagnetic burst.
"We're ready,"
said Phocis Takar, standing taller and pushing out his chest as Magnus emerged from the belly of the Stormbird. The Primarch conferred briefly with his tech marines, then nodded and waved them aboard. The Thousand Sons marched onto the gunship, 25 in all, and swiftly took their assigned seats along its up-armored fuselage. Ahriman and Phocis Takar were the last aboard, and were standing on the embarkation ramp when Perturabo came over to speak to his brother.
"Good hunting, Magnus," said the Lord of Iron. "May you find your missing sons alive and unharmed."
Magnus nodded and said, "And may you find the source of Morningstar's pain, brother."
"I will," said Perturabo.
His gravel-voiced certainty left Ahriman in no doubt he would.
"And then I will destroy it."
"Even if you do, there is no saving this world."
"I know,"
said Perturabo, offering his brother his hand.
"It will be an act of vengeance, nothing more. But that will be enough for me."
"It will need to be enough for all of us," said Magnus, taking Perturabo's hand. As the Lord of Iron returned to his gunship, Ahriman saw a look of profound sadness in his Primarch's face. "My lord," he said, and the moment passed. "Is something wrong?"
"Nothing,"
said Magnus, turning and striding down the troop compartment to take his place at the head of his warriors. What had Magnus seen when he gripped his brother's hand? Did he see every secret thought hidden? Would such knowledge be a blessing or a curse? Looking over at the Iron Warrior Stormbird, Ahriman knew exactly which it was. Vashti watched the Stormbirds lift off in a haze of jet wash and vaporized rain through the toughened glass of the makeshift control center. Mechanicum adepts had built it on a cleared gun platform on the highest tower of the Shirai Maveth and hurriedly wired it into the operating systems of the fortress. Barely functional was the expression that leapt to Vashti's mind when she first saw her new working environment. Together with Tezzerom and a staff of Calculus Logi, she had resumed her duties coordinating airspace around Kalena after only 10 hours in the Medicaid levels to treat her grievous wounds. An atomizer misted aerosolized water and counterseptic over her burned face. She tried to blink, then remembered she couldn't. The fire in the command center had vaporized the protective layers from her eyes, and until grafts and augmetics could be sourced, she relied on the atomizers. Her arms and back had been scorched black, but dropping behind her command console had saved her life from Karina Moreno's treacherous blast. A constant flow of stims kept the worst of the pain at bay, but even so, she hurt in a dozen places, and her every movement was cripplingly slow. Still, she had been inordinately lucky. Only she and Tezzerom had made it out alive. If what Tezza had become could be called living. The scraps of her friend's ruined body hung suspended, fetus-like, in an amniotic tank in the center of the makeshift control center. Cognitive enhancers hung like pulsing snakes from the rear of her cranium, boosting her ability to sift the cascades of data surrounding her in twitching fog banks of new spheric light. Princeps of the Collegia Titanicus sometimes commanded their giant war engines in a similar manner, and it was said the connection to the Omnissiah was sublime. Vashti could understand that, but the thought of her life spent as a wraith, preserved in biosuspension gel, made her skin crawl. Tezza's body was broken beyond repair, but her mind was more agile than ever.
"Gunships will be safe distance clear in 6 seconds," said Tezza,
her voice grating from the brass voxhorn hung from wires in the corner of the bare plascrete chamber.
"Operational timetable resuming in 10 seconds.
"Handoffs logged and ready," replied Vashti. "I have 54 ships making stacked figure of eights overhead. Let's use the extra time they've given us."
Vashti had suspended flight operations for 7 minutes to allow the legions a window to get their ships prepped and beyond Kalena's airspace. As it turned out, they'd only needed half that time. With the downing of the Lux Ferrum and the loss of the platforms for at least another 2 days, what transorbital ships they had were being pressed into making faster and more frequent trips between the fleet and the surface. Pushing ships and crews so hard was beyond dangerous, but what other choice was there? Vashti studied the crackling, static-washed panels before her. Kalena was all but abandoned. The people who'd thronged the city's streets now camped at the foot of the Sharae Maveth's walls. For a time, the sky over the fortress had remained clear and still, even as Calaena burned and localized magna tempests sent lightning ripping along its streets. Tens of thousands had pressed against the distant edges of the fortress's outworks, seeking safety in the lee of its towering walls. The Iron Warriors had been forced to deactivate the minefields and open the gates on the outer walls to allow Morningstar's people to approach. Now, an ocean of humanity pressed up against the fortress, stretching all the way back to the edges of the city, at least 100,000 or more, though with census information woefully out of date, it was impossible to know for certain.
"Focus, Mistress Eshkol," replied Tezza.
All traces of the humanity she had once possessed in abundance now absent from her voice. Her friend's body endured, but what had made her human was all but gone. Vashti nodded and turned her attention from the thousands of people at the foot of the walls to the orbital tracks and streams of data being updated every second. In her last free second before Vashti took on the burden of getting as many people as she could off-world, she glanced down at the tracks of the two gunships as they slowly diverged. One raced north towards Zarukin, the other due west towards the centre of Morningstar's last remaining ocean.
"Find what you're looking for," said Vashti, angrier than she could ever remember. "Make the bastards pay for what they've done here."